From the studios of Wavefront Audiovisual Engineering in Schenectady, New York, this is Little Brother, the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, crime, greed, corruption, and all of the wonderful things that happen when you mix them together. Like any responsible little brother, we tell on Big Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter, and I'll be your host as we explore this world of the high tech. This is episode 94 of Little Brother for the 23rd of July, 2022. Stay tuned. Little Brother is right around the corner. As always, I'd like to remind everyone that the opinions and views expressed in this program are strictly those of the participants, and not necessarily those of anyone else who may, for whatever reason, attempt to claim them. Responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint may request an opportunity for a rebuttal. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can write me at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com. So, let's get started. In episode 66, I reported that T-Mobile had been pwned. Again. Lawsuits ensued. The news this week is that T-Mobile have agreed to a $350 million settlement over the pwning. Everyone affected by the hack is due a $25 settlement. How cute. California customers are to receive a settlement of $100, and anyone who has suffered actual losses as a result of the pwn can receive up to $25,000 in compensation. MinIO is an open-source software project that implements a high-performance object store. That's probably Greek to many of you, as it's not something that end users typically encounter. It's more like a component that can be used in building an app. Open-source software is free to use, free to modify, but not free to claim as your own. There is a license agreement, and part of that agreement is that if you use it in a product and distribute that product, you must make the open source parts readily available and license them under the same terms. That brings us to Nutanix. Nutanix is a commercial high-performance object store that uses MinIO under the hood. And MinIO alleges that they have not complied with the terms of the license and not taken any action to remedy this. As such, MinIO have canceled Nutanix's license to use the code, leaving Nutanix in the tough spot of having to produce a product with its core completely missing.
We've been trying to reach you about your vehicle's extended warranty.
Those words and others like them are one of the biggest sources of consumer complaints, according to the Federal Communications Commission, or FCC. On July 7th, the FCC issued cease and desist orders against a half dozen companies behind these calls and told telecoms providers that they can block them if they wish. Surprise, surprise, the companies neither ceased nor desisted, and the carriers didn't seem too keen to take advantage of their newfound permission to block these calls. So, on Thursday, the FCC issued an order that directs telephone providers to stop carrying calls linked to 13 individuals and 6 companies, basically pulling the plug on these operations. It further requires phone carriers to report back to the FCC about what actions they have taken. In other FCC news, the agency is seeking to find out if cellular providers are exposing users' geolocation data. As I have mentioned to you all several times recently, and I'm going to talk about at length later in this episode, that little device you carry in your pocket is a snitch for Big Brother. FCC Chairwoman Jessica Rosenworcel has opened an investigation into the question at the request of Democratic lawmakers. Inquiries have been sent to 15 top mobile carriers, obviously starting with the big three, Verizon, AT&T, and T-Mobile, Once again, this is an effort to protect individual women's data on the heels of the Dobbs decision, which may have other positive side effects for everyone in the U.S. as well. TechCrunch is reporting that Lime, an electric scooter sharing service, has added a new feature to appease the governments in some cities where they operate. The scooters now have sidewalk detection technology using computer vision. In the event that you drive one of the scooters onto the sidewalk, you may receive an admonition, or your progress may be throttled, at the discretion of the specific city. Trials of the technology will be carried out on 400 scooters in San Francisco. Once again, a tech that is not necessarily nefarious in its intent, but I can see there's potential for abuse as we've added yet more cameras to the landscape. And those are the headlines. You're listening to Little Brother. I have learned from time to time that we are all carrying a little snitch in our pockets. Yep, even me. Even before smartphones started to catch on, your location was not a secret if you carried a cell phone, even as far back as 1G. The cell phone networks need to know where your phone is so that they can direct your calls to you. And it's not like knowing where a phone is a new idea. Landline phones, at least until VoIP appeared, were always tied to a specific location, now weren't they? The big difference between this and a landline is that we carry our phones with us everywhere we go, which means that everywhere we go is knowable if you just ask the right parties. As it turns out, this information is for sale. Guess who has deep pockets and can buy stuff? The federal government, that's who. You see, the government is prohibited by the Fourth Amendment from carrying out unreasonable searches and seizures, and to be clear, a search through private data is a search. But they are not, apparently, prohibited from paying somebody else to do this. And the goals of those companies that hold the data? What do you think they are? Well, making money off of the data they hold, of course. That's why they hold it. So, if you've got one party that's holding data to make money, and another party that has money and wants data, guess what happens? The most annoying thing is that there is nothing illegal about this. You signed away all your rights to rein it in when you clicked agree on that impenetrable terms of service document that they put in front of you for 30 seconds when you signed up for service. The ACLU have been digging into this. According to an ACLU press release from this week, they submitted a number of Freedom of Information requests to various federal agencies back in 2020 after the Wall Street Journal reported on how Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, and the Customs and Border Patrol, CBP, were doing exactly this. Well, the FOIA requests were ignored, which led to lawsuits, which have just borne fruit. It seems as though multiple federal government agencies have been harvesting data from apps on hundreds of millions of phones, allowing the DHS to establish a pattern of life for pretty much everyone who owns a phone. This is bad. Now, in the current political environment, this is going to get worse. States are starting to take an unhealthy interest in the movements of people, and while their pockets are not as deep, neither are the piles of data that they might want. Texas, for instance, probably has no interest in somebody who lives in New York. They might, however, be interested to know that one of their citizens went to New York for a week, especially if that citizen is, say, a woman who might be pregnant. We've already covered the fact that a retail giant can determine if a woman is pregnant, so you'd better believe that a data trail like this is going to cover it. You'd better also believe that a data trail will cover all sorts of other things that might be legal now, but not legal later, or might be legal somewhere you've visited, but not where you live. Who knows? You might get investigated for going to a state where you can buy pot, or fireworks, or guns, or something else that's not legal in your state. Now, I don't have a problem with such investigations being conducted on the whole, but damn it, enough with the goddamn dragnets. If you suspect me of something, get a fucking warrant or get off our backs. I have a few messages from listeners. Asriel responded to the segment last week about the 1990 AT&T failure. There was this section that I quoted from the Hacker Crackdown by Bruce Sterling. There is simply no way to assure that software is free of flaws. Though software is mathematical in nature, it cannot be quote-unquote proven like a mathematical theorem. Software is more like language, with inherent ambiguities, with different definitions, different assumptions, different levels of meaning that can conflict. Keep in mind that Sterling wrote those words 30 years ago. So Asriel writes, a segment in Little Brother reminded me of this, the best attempt I'm aware of mathematically provable code. He included a link to a Wikipedia article about a technology called TLA+. By the way, I absolutely love that this is called TLA+. We usually joke in IT about TLA standing for three-letter acronym. Anyway, a quick scan of the article reveals that this is a technology developed in 1999 or so, implemented in Java, which provides a framework for defining the correct behavior of software. One of the components, then, called the TLA+ proof system, well, proves the behavior. The proof language is designed to be independent of any particular theorem prover. The proofs are written in a declarative style, and then those are converted into a set of objects called obligations that are processed by various provers. It's interesting stuff, and even more interesting is that it appeared a mere 7 years after Sterling's work. I have some reservations about it, but it doesn't seem like they're fact-based. It might work, but it doesn't seem to be widely in use. Then again, those of you who were around for the original incarnation of Little Brother might remember that I was also skeptical of TPMs, which I have generally come to accept as good technology when they're not used as shackles. But back to the topic at hand. It is also plausible that the test-driven development that's currently in fashion, and that has been for maybe 15 or 20 years now, also attempts to fill the void of provability. Even if it is not a fully rigorous mathematical proof, it does at least provide a demonstration that software can pass a practical test. Thanks for the link, Asriel. I also got a message from a listener in Texas who was responding to last week's fail of the week. He writes, I'd say that it's amazing how they have electrical power on the ISS that has been running for years and years. We have electrically powered robots on Mars that run for years and years. But in Texas, I can't run my frigging washer during the daytime because it might be too much for the grid. Meanwhile, the AC is cranked in the domed ballparks in Texas. You might ask why, but it's because the scientists are in charge of the ISS and the Mars robots and so on, while the Republicans are in charge of Texas. Pretty much says it all. Just baffles me why folks are hurting in Texas who still support the GOP. I've asked a few, and their response is typically, well, it would be worse with the Democrats. And that sort of mindset is almost impossible to get past. I think he might be a wee bit upset. Speaking as somebody that lives in a Democrat-led part of the country, I have to say, our lights do seem to work. We all know that our search histories reveal a wealth of information about us. There are lots of jokes about guys making agreements with their buddies that if they die, their search histories to be cleared out so their wives don't find out what porn they've been searching up. And we hear bits in the news now and again about how this or that crime was solved by looking at the perpetrator's search history. When there's a mass shooting, what's the first thing you get to hear about? What was in the shooter's search history? As they try to piece together what made this guy tick. But your computer doesn't hold the only copy of your search history. When you jump onto Google, whether you logged on or not, they gather bits of intelligence to try to piece together who you are and try to line that up with your search history, which, of course, they keep. Once again, I'm going to repeat the Steve Rambam mantra. There's nothing nefarious here. They just want to sell you stuff. And honestly, what better thing is there for them to try to sell you than something you are looking for? But there is a problem. As I've mentioned before, where there is a business record, there is the ability for that record to be discovered by subpoena. On top of that, as I've already explained in this very episode, quite often those records can also be bought, even by law enforcement. So what can we do to minimize those records? Well, first and foremost, we can change our search engine. The prominent search engine, Google, has become so ingrained in Western culture that the very name of the search engine, used as a verb, is the common term for the act of carrying out a web search. I mean, surely you have Googled something today, right? It's kind of creepy what Google does, though. Let me give you an example. A few years back, before I essentially stopped using Google, I took a moment to do a search for a piece of audio equipment to use here at Wavefront Studios. I found it at one of the big AV retailers, a name anybody in the audio business will recognize. 10 letters, begins with an S. I decided I really didn't need it just yet and went on about my day. From there, it seemed like every website I visited had an ad on it for that retailer. Many of them ads for that specific item. Yes, confirmation bias is a thing, but that was a little bit too much for me to accept it as a coincidence. But what if you didn't Google things? Suppose there was a less creepy alternative. The search engine I use these days, and recommend pretty strongly, is called DuckDuckGo. It's spelled pretty much exactly the way it sounds. Now, don't get me wrong, DuckDuckGo does monetize your searches. They do send you advertisements based on your search, but not on your search history. Once you've moved off to another site, it's gone. It doesn't follow you to remind you that you showed an interest in a studio microphone or whatever. So, to use DuckDuckGo instead of Google, you just go into your browser settings and change it. If you use a Chromium-based browser, such as Chromium, Chrome, Brave, or Microsoft Edge, simply go into the settings, find the tab on the left labeled Search Engine, click it, and pick DuckDuckGo. For Firefox, it's the same basic drill, except that the tab is labeled simply Search. On your mobile device, go to the App Store and download the DuckDuckGo app and use it in place of the Google app, or simply set it up as the default search for your mobile web browser. Okay, so there's one thing. The other thing you can do is to minimize the searches that go to a search engine in the first place. I find that an enormous amount of my personal search traffic goes to, or ultimately lands on, Wikipedia. What if I could search Wikipedia offline? Well, it turns out that you can. There's an app for that. The app is called Kiwix, that's spelled K-I-W-I-X, and it is available for Android, iPhone, Windows, Mac, Linux, as well as a version that you can run in a web browser based either on Firefox or Chromium, and one extra special version that can run on a Raspberry Pi that will set it up as an actual Wi-Fi hotspot and server, making Wikipedia or other Kiwix materials available on a local Wi-Fi without using the internet. Beyond that, you will need to download the source material, and Kiwix.org has that as well. A full copy of Wikipedia requires 12 gigs of storage without the pictures, 90 gigs if you do want the pictures, and there are other lightweight editions available as well that take up less space. Personally, I carry the full edition with pictures on my laptop and desktop machines, allowing me to search Wikipedia offline any time I want. Now, I don't know for sure if surveillance has become more common recently, or if it's just becoming more apparent. It's certainly becoming more insidious. But I believe we've reached a point where it is on us to do everything we can to make sure that there is nothing to surveil. As usual, we will end this week's show with the fail of the week, and this week we have two. The first fail of the week goes to Microsoft. You remember how I mentioned last week that patching software to improve it can be dangerous? Microsoft found that out the hard way on Wednesday night when a deployment to their flagship Microsoft 365 platform went wrong. "We've determined," they tweeted, "that a recent deployment contained a broken connection to an internal storage service, which has resulted in impact." Microsoft 365 is Microsoft's subscription-based service that manages email, messaging, VoIP, as well as online versions of the entire Office product line. To say that this resulted in impact is something of an understatement, as many businesses have abandoned locally run installations of all of these applications in favor of their Microsoft-hosted versions. The second fail of the week goes to Albany International Airport in upstate New York. It seems as though there was a power failure at the airport, after which, when the parking garage systems restarted, some of the clocks did not get properly set. The result was that the entry gates were issuing tickets dated January 1st, 2000. The follow-on result was a shock when people issued such tickets attempted to exit the parking garage. The automated systems attempted to charge them for 22 years worth of parking, resulting in charges of up to $115,000. And it's worth noting, I believe, I could be mistaken about this, I believe that parking garage was not actually built yet in January 1st of 2000. Anyway, no travelers were actually required to pay the exorbitant fees. The Albany Times Union, amusingly enough, described this as the revenge of Y2K. Little Brother is produced, recorded, edited, and hosted by yours truly, Chuck Ritter. Special thanks to Fongaboo and the crowd at Helix for web hosting support. Shout out to the Albany 2600 group. Special thanks to Azriel, Julie Bernstein, Joe Cadillac, Carol Baskin, Michael Bronstein, and Thriller at Play for story leads. Our headline music is Adrenochrome by Super Action 80. Our Who Got Pwned music is Analog Summer 3 by Asarhad. Our Fail of the Week music is Space Reggae by Zap. Our opening theme music and bumper is Around Chaos by Heatseeker, and our closing theme is Space Debris by Captain Image. If you have questions or comments about this podcast or want to join the conversation, please drop me an email at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com. Join us next week when Little Brother tells on Big Brother once again. Stay safe and be well. The show where we talk about the fan is still on. Everyone affected by the hack is due a $25 settlement. That's not the word. You must make the open source parts. Let's start that one more time. Damn it. FCC Chairwoman Jessica Rosenworcel. Let's do it again. As I have mentioned to you all on several prior KKKPK, the best attempt I'm aware of a mathematically provable code. Proves the software of the behavior, yep. Mm-hmm. A quick scan of the article reveals that this is a technology developed, and it's past that sort of mindset. Fuck! Online versions of the entire Office. The automated attempted systems The result was that the entry gates were issuing tickets jaded. Yeah, I'm sure some people got pretty jaded over this.